welcome to Musings on Golf, where today, post-Thanksgiving, we've got quite a bit to talk about with Ludvig Åberg winning his first PGA Tour event, the return of Tiger Woods later this week. But Bob Bupka, I want to know, which turkey did you and Janice eat on your trip up north?
Well, we had a fantastic day. My sister Nancy hosted, and my brother Tom was there. So for the entire family to be together on Thanksgiving was more than I could ask for. And thanks to Janice and all her help in transporting me to Boston. And not that easy a feat, but we got it done and had a great day.
And there really is nothing like being able to be with family over the Thanksgiving holidays. You know, we have the 4th of July is our birthday, I guess you could say. But to me, Thanksgiving is our national holiday, Bob.
I agree, and love sitting down and having all that turkey.
Well, I don't know if Ludvig Åberg eats turkey or not, but the Swedish kid who has had an incredible 6-month run pretty much capped it off with a runaway victory at the RSM Classic in South Carolina a couple of weeks ago. Look, Bob, this kid, how about this? Number one amateur in the world, finishing at out of college, 2-time NCAA champion, finished number one in the PGA Tour University program. He wins on the DP World Tour. And I think maybe a few who didn't really understand how good this kid is wondered about Luke Donald putting him on the Ryder Cup team as a raw rookie. He held up very, very well on a victorious European team. And now he goes out and just blows away the field. You talk about a picture, a view into the future of the PGA Tour. It's right with this kid.
Well, I got to give a lot of credit to Luke Donald because he played with Ludvig last summer. And the first time he had basically seen him in action, and Luke Donald said to him right after that round, don't be surprised if you get a nod to be on our Ryder Cup team. A lot of people thought that was a bold move by Luke Donald, but he knew, and now the rest of the golf world is finding out this is a genuine superstar, and I mean superstar. The moon's the limit for him. I mean, wouldn't surprise me if he goes on and wins a major in the next upcoming season.
Well, he certainly gets into all four major championships. I believe he does. He gets into all of the big money elevated events on the PGA Tour. He gets into the Century Tournament of Champions in Kapalua to kick off the season. You look at the big time young stars now, all of a sudden, they're over in Europe.
No doubt about it. It's becoming more and more a global game, and I'm just fascinated by the ability of Åberg to play this game. And sources close to him tell me he's a great kid too. And boy, I love hearing that. Anybody coming to the forefront in the world of golf, you know, if they have the ability to play the game is great, but if they have the ability to be a good ambassador for the sport, yeah, That's even greater.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the praise that's been heaped on Victor Hovland. So I expect him to be a major force in 2024, along with Mr. Åberg, who had this to say about his win.
It's been a wild 6 months, but it's been so much fun. And, you know, I still pinch myself in the morning when I wake up to kind of realize that this is what I do for a job. And you know, it's been so much fun. And these experiences that I've had over the last 6 months has been beyond my dreams. And, you know, I'll never forget it.
I bet he won't. So we've got the launch of who appears to be a rising star, and then the return, Bob, of, I guess you could say, the ultimate rising star in professional golf for a long, long time. Tiger Woods returning to play this week, has not played since the Masters last year, and that didn't end up well, but he's as the host at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. He's teeing it up.
I don't know how he got an invitation, but yes, I do. It's his event, so a lot of excitement now on the Hero World Challenge due to Tiger Woods participating.
Hey, Bob, I haven't followed, obviously. He's secretive about a lot of things. I don't know exactly what's going on in terms of his health, but I have to believe he feels like he can be competitive if he's going to tee it up. He's not doing it for any ceremonial nonsense. He's got to believe he can go out there, play, walk for four rounds, and compete against an extremely top-level field.
Well, the last report I got on Tiger's health, his ankle is fully healed. So that's a big thing. And, of course, we'll see how he shines under the competitive light. Wouldn't surprise me even Tiger goes on to win the Hero World Challenge.
Two guys who won't be there. And, again, you know, there's a lot of drama, unfortunately, for the U.S. side at the Ryder Cup, mostly led by Patrick Cantlay. And he and his playing partner sidekick, Xander Schauffele, have decided not to play at the Hero World Challenge. Justin Rose and Lucas Glover, who many think should have gotten into the U.S. team. Nonetheless, I don't know what to make of this. I know Patrick Cantlay is still a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board. It just seems unusual that both of them would withdraw.
Well, you never know. It could be something completely different than anything we're privy to. So I just take it as a scheduling conflict. And, you know, it's good for Justin Rose and Lucas Glover, two great additions to that 30-man field.
Yeah, agreed. And we're going to be joined in just a minute by Rhett Butler. Rhett's a good buddy of mine and someone who you've gotten to know a bit. Outstanding junior golfer when I grew up, has gone on to become an unbelievable poker player. And he's a good supporter of our podcast, of our program. And the stories that I think our listeners are going to enjoy from Rhett, both on the golf course and certainly at the poker table, a lot of money being spent. And boy, you got to have some real nerves, Bob, when you're playing for the kind of money that people are going to hear about. That he won. Hey, the guy won $3 million.
Yeah, no. It's fascinating. Poker has exploded over the last 10 years, and we'll talk about it during that interview. But when they figured out a way to let TV viewers see the cards of the players, that changed everything, and it just continues to get more popular. And, you know, the World Series of poker held out in Las Vegas, just a huge, huge event where the best poker players in the world come to compete.
And you will hear from our friend Rhett Butler, who finished third at the World Series of Poker in 2006, right after these messages. We're delighted to welcome William & Harry as the newest sponsor of Musings on Golf. William & Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitted inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to williamandharry.com.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. You know, Bob, is a junior golfer, I knew and heard all about the outstanding play of Rhett Butler in the Washington, D.C. area. Rhett has gone on to reach success at the highest level as a professional poker player and is now a partner and owner in an exciting company that is creating some fantastic new golf shoes. Rhett Butler, frankly, we do give a damn, and thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.
It's my pleasure. I love your show. I love your interviews, so it's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Hey, Rhett, Bob Bupka here, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be talking to a professional poker player. I've watched the World Series of Poker for I don't know how many years now, really enjoy it. Always thought that, you know, I could be a good poker player. And then I find out, you know, if I got in with anybody that had any poker talent, I was going to come up short. So basically, I stick to blackjack, and you play a lot of blackjack too. So my question right off the bat would be, you got a college student just graduating, Rhett. Let's say he even graduated with a math degree. So he's very sharp. He's young. He's got full of stamina. How could he become a great poker player? What would you recommend the steps that he would follow to try and achieve the level of success like somebody like yourself?
Well, that's a good question. And became so prevalent when they had the online poker skills and poker capabilities. A lot of these smart kids were coming out of college and dedicating their time to playing poker online. There was a lot of written knowledge and books and a lot of ways to improve your game, which when we were growing up, it was not available. And I told everybody, just get a job, because playing poker is a very hard way to make an easy living, because only about 10 or 15% of the people are going to make it. So it's better to have a job and play poker on the side. That being said, some of these guys have gone on and that I've played with that have done phenomenal playing poker for a living. And I wouldn't recommend it, because it's not, you don't get the social skills that you need in real life playing poker all the time at a table with, you know, a lot of people that are trying to grind out a living.
Hey, Rhett, what attribute would you consider the best to have for a poker player? You know, his memory, his ability to read other players, ability to, you know, evaluate his hand. Is there one attribute that you think stands out?
Well, I think there's three, really. One is the math calculations and knowing all your odds pretty much at all times in the game. The second is to read your players is a huge part, because it doesn't matter so much what you have in your hand as what you kind of read what they have in their hand. And the third thing is bet sizing. You have to realize, especially in the no limit world, how much to put in where somebody may or may not call. Because a lot of times you might have the worst hand, but if you bet just the right amount, it will put it either to the test when you want them to call, or you definitely want them to fold.
I was just thinking, Kelly, the biggest thing ever to happen to poker from a layman's point of view is when they came up with that on TV, you could see the players' cards. Prior to that, you're just looking at guys sitting there. You don't know what they have. You see them bet. But being able to see the cards really was a boom to poker, and it exploded.
Well, you're exactly right. Poker to me was fairly boring until you could actually see how they were playing. Once you could see how the players actually were bet sizing and reading the other people at the table and why they were doing certain things, it became fascinating. Even to the average poker player, they loved it, because then they were learning a lot and they see a lot of the bluffs, you know, positions, everything in poker, and then bet sizing, you know, so you learn a lot by watching, and it's fun. I mean, it's a fun thing to watch then. It wasn't very much fun when you couldn't see the cards in the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, it certainly makes a lot of sense. I know it enhanced my enjoyment immensely. Do you ever play in a game with Doyle?
Yeah, I've played with Doyle Brunson a few times in tournaments, never in a cash game. And some of the better players played with Negrano several times and Helmuth. When you play in those tournaments, I did it for about a year, year and a half. Play with Johnny Chan multiple times too. And they're all different. I mean, Doyle Brunson is fairly conservative, so is Johnny Chan. And the other players, like Ivy and players like that, they're real aggressive. It's hard to read them.
Yeah, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Rhett Butler of the company William & Harry here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Rhett, high-stakes games. What's the highest-stake game you ever played in, and who were some of the players that people might recognize, poker players, who played in those?
Well, we had a weekly game for a long time in Virginia that was probably considered a relatively high stakes game. And then it got extremely big. it was around a 20,000 buy-in, and typically people would win or lose up to say 50,000 a night. And that was weekly. And the players, Tony Gregg played in that. We played together for 8 years, and he turned out to be one of the best online players, and he won the one drop in Vegas. So he's won over $20 million online and probably another $10 million in live tournaments. And then Greg Merson played with us, and he won the main event, and he's considered one of the top players. And then Christian Harder. We had Tom Dwan and Antonio Escandari, Viffer. All these guys would fly in occasionally to play in the game. It was a very, very difficult game. So that was a big game. And really, the players got a lot better, obviously, after our regular game, because people are just trying to find the high stakes game to play in.
You know, I really liked the movie Molly's Game, and I think you did as well. Was that the games that you were playing in Virginia, were they similar to what she was doing on the West Coast and then when she came to New York?
Yes, very similar. We didn't rake the games, though. We just people would just put money up to play for food and drink, and we had the best dealers also. Molly, I met her. She's a beautiful girl, and you know, she ran into some troubles because I think she didn't pay off some of the mafia, which was a true story. One, and she never raked the game until she got to New York. But yeah, those games, one of my friends played in her game. A lot of celebrities played in her game. Ours really weren't celebrities. I mean, Michael Phelps and people like that would play in our game, stuff like that occasionally, but just because they like the challenge of very high stakes. And yeah, but that was a great movie. The book is better because they mentioned the real names.
Played in that only a 2-year run. It was really kind of a unique setup, right? With the TV show, what was it called? World Series of Golf, that combined golf and poker. What went on there? What was the format? And what was that like competing? And again, well, that was your own money, right?
Yes, it was. So you either had to be invited or apply to play. They had 125 players, and it was a $10,000 entry fee, and it was called the World Series of Golf Poker. And you got split into five divisions, 25 each, and no one could be less than a 2 handicap in the top division, supposedly. And then was separated by tee boxes and handicaps. So I was one of the weakest players in the top division. I think I was a 6 handicap at the time. And we played the back tees. And it was a great format. Everybody started just like a poker tournament with 10,000 in chips. And there was a guy that regulated the bets. And if you anteed every hole and they went up, just like a poker tournament, and you could bet anywhere from the minimum to all in at any time. And if a person, you couldn't check raise, but if a person bet, you either had to take the bet, whatever it was there, or you were out of the hole. You couldn't finish the hole. And if you lost, you just lost whatever the ante was or whatever your total was, just like a poker tournament. And it was really a cool thing. Very difficult to follow. But if you played any poker tournaments, it was the same idea. And so just the format was 25 players in each division, and you played fivesomes. If you beat the other 4 players the first day, you got your original $10,000 back, and the other 4 lost, so there was $40,000 in the pot. Then the next day, you played a fivesome. If you won that, you played in the final 5 for the big money, and you're playing against different tee boxes. No hand, no strokes. Oh. And it was very clever, because you're playing against some 18 handicap the last day, or I was, playing essentially the ladies' tees that from 100 in, he was really good. Yeah. And so, and I'm teeing off 120 behind him, and I hit the ball okay back then, but it was a great event. And it was cool. NBC had it 1 year, and then CBS, but you're mic'd up the whole time. And it's different nerves when you're on television and they're listening to everything you say.
Yeah. As opposed to trying to keep that blank face, right?
Yes. I mean, when you try not to show your emotions too much, but for me, it wasn't as difficult as for other good golfers. Good golfers know they were all better than me. They just didn't gamble. They did not bet as well as I did. And it was bet sizing and putting my strength was 100 and in. And so if I would get a better player, I would maximize my bets when we were equal there versus his game. They were, and I was a good putter too. I was a good putter. So that helped quite a bit. I made it to the finals that first year and came in second, and I did hit a bad golf shot. That's the part about choking that you know, I did choke a little bit on that shot, and that's where people have to understand. You had a lot of good shots, but sometimes under the gun, you know, you're going to feel the pressure. Bad shot. I ended up, you know, it cost me like $100,000+ that one shot, you know. So
wow.
Yeah. I mean, that people always will come up to me, go, "Oh, wow, I watch you on TV. Boy, I can't believe you choked so bad." I go, "Yeah, I hit a bad wedge. I did, you know, but I hit a lot of good shots to get there." People understand how hard it is down the stretch, you know.
I'm just intrigued by listening to you. What were your nerves like when you were playing that high stakes golf as opposed to high stakes poker?
Well, high stakes golf is much more nerve wracking than high stakes poker. Because it's physical. It's funny. You'll see people that'll bet $1,000 at the poker table or the blackjack table, but they only play a $5 an ass off. And the reason being, they realize that it's so difficult to, you know, when you're under the gun to hit good shots. When people say people choke, you got to get into a position to choke. And in golf, you know, it's very mental. It's very difficult on the body and the mind to put it all together.
Yeah, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Rhett Butler of the company William & Harry here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Rhett, as I said at the outset, long before you became known for your skill at the table, you were a really good golfer growing up. Didn't you hold a few course records even when you were a junior golfer?
Yeah, I was pretty good. At 16, I broke the course record at Georgetown Prep, the local course that I went to high school at, and I shot 62 there. And I really kind of gagged because I played the last four holes at even par. I wanted to shoot 59 real bad. And then the next week I went to Woodmont and I found out that I shot 38 on the front side of the South Course, and I shot 28 on the back. And that held the nine-hole record for a long time until one of the U.S. Opens, a Japanese golfer. It wasn't Hideki, but he shot 27 on that back side. So I had that record. And then a few when I was older. Shot 64 at Lakewood and some things like that. And then my game pretty much deteriorated in the last 20 years. So
at Woodmont Country Club, Rockville, Maryland, that's the course you're talking about. That's the one that's hosted a lot of qualifiers, the final stage for the U.S. Open, right?
Yeah, every year. And I would go watch my friends play. I never was good enough to play in the final stages. But, you know, I played a lot of golf with Webb Heinzelman, Chris Petticord, Funk. You know, they were all the top players when I was in my 20s. And so I got to play against them. You realize when they're giving you 1.5 a side that you're not really a very competitive player at the top level. They're so much better. People don't realize what a stroke or two in golf is. And so that's when I stuck to poker and some, you know, cash games. And I like to play golf for money, though, that's for sure.
Rhett Butler's here with us of William & Harry. We're proud to have him on Musings on Golf. Rhett, you made it all the way to the final table in the 2006 World Series of Poker. What were the keys to you getting to that level? And you were handsomely rewarded, I think, a little more than $3 million.
Yes, I was quite fortunate. There was a large field. I think there were over 8,000 players. So it was 8 days of playing poker. And, you know, I would have never got in the tournament if it wasn't for Chris Moneymaker the year before. My son and friend were sitting there and they said, "Hey, Dad, how would you do if you got to play against this Chris Moneymaker?" And I said, "Well, if he had enough money, I'd never have to work again." He wasn't regarded as a top level player, super nice guy, but he changed poker for pretty much everybody. So I told my friend, I said, "Hey, if you get the money to put up in my expenses, I'll split it with you guys." And that's how it started. Cause I had played in the World Series of Poker in 88 and I came in 20 something and they only paid 18 places. I said, "I'll never do this again. You know, I've 3.5, 4 days and I got zero back." I said, "I'll just play cash." And then here I was playing in the World Series of Poker game. Then, you know, a lot of players, obviously, in 2006. And I only was real nervous one time when I bluffed all in, like day two or three. And otherwise, I was pretty calm.
How did Moneymaker change everything? Why was he different?
He had the name and the fact that these top players. You know, most of the people that won the World Series of Poker were top-level players, and at least They had a lot of skill. And he was a guy, just came on the scene with the name Moneymaker. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. And people all got interested. They'd say, if he can win, you know, I can play, that type of thing. And so it really increased the, I'd say, maybe 10 times the amount of people started playing poker after he won. And then online became so big. So many people were playing online because it was so easy. It was convenient. And it's fun, you know, to sit there, either play little tournaments or play cash games or whatever you want to play for. It was fun.
Rhett, tell me about William and Harry, your products, and the charity that I know is important to you.
Yes, William and Harry is a great concept. It's a luxury clothing line for men and women. And the gentleman that sold me clothes, he would come to my office every 6 months and I would buy something. He came to me right before COVID and said, hey, there's a store that they'll have an ability to buy down in Williamsburg. You have any interest in the clothing business? And I said, not really. And he said, well, it looks like a pretty good deal. And I said, well, what I would like to do, I would like to raise some money for suicide prevention, because it's something very dear. My son's best friend committed suicide on New Year's Eve 3 or 4 years ago. Very emotional for me. And I had had dinner with the young man the week before. Great, great young man. And then another friend of ours, matter of fact, he's a great golfer, and his brother, their son, committed suicide also. And I said, there's got to be something that maybe we can raise money for the vets and the kids, because during COVID, suicide went up about 300 to 400%. It was hard on children, hard on the veterans, and that's my passion. I did a lot of work at Walter Reed and Children's Hospital. And so if every online sale we do, we take a portion of it, it goes into a trust, and we can self-direct the funds towards both suicide prevention and mental health. And hopefully we'll make a difference in the next 3 to 5 years. And that was one of the reasons I started this business, to self-direct some of the profits to the charities.
Just listening to you talk, Rhett, it makes me proud to be representing William and Harry. You know, suicide is so, so personal. And, you know, you just hear of people that you would never think in a million years that they would be capable of doing it, but they have those inner demons, which is why you're connected with mental health. Congratulations on your efforts. And you know, the way I look at it, Rhett, if you could save one person, one family, for having to go through the ordeal of a suicide, it's a job well done.
I couldn't agree more, Bob. I mean, that's, we don't know, but we just hope. It's devastating. They'll never, ever be the same once you're touched. And I think we all have friends or family or someone that we know that we're connected with that has faced this terrible occurrence, and even mental health with our vets. I mean, we might not know all of our vets, but we owe everything to our vets for keeping us safe. And the same with the children. You know, you try to help them and guide them and keep them out of trouble. But it's a difficult time now. It's very tough. It's too much stuff on the internet and too many things going around, and it's hard. So I don't really understand suicide, but I know that we need to try to help people when they're in a desperate spot.
I'm glad for what you guys are doing, and we're dealing our final hands with Rhett Butler here on Musings on Golf. I know Bob's going to close it out with a couple questions, but before we get to that point, we had Ken Green on last week, and it was a really powerful interview, by the way. And with Kenny, we started a new feature called Your Three Shots. All right, so Rhett Butler, here are your three shots. I'm going to ask you a question. Give me a brief answer. Number one, if you could only play one golf course for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Since I've never played Augusta, I think that would be my top choice, because that's the only course that I've ever really, really wanted to play. So yeah, that would be on course to play the rest of my life.
All right, good answer. Number two, who would be the others in your dream foursome, whether they're living or deceased?
Good question. My dad, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer.
And Rhett Butler.
All right, final question for me. What would be the most amount of money that you would be willing of your money to bet in a single round of golf?
Well, in the old days, it was fairly high. I'd say it was right around 50,000. Today, I just don't have the skill level, and I do get nervous now because I don't have the talent. I'd say probably 10 or 20,000 would be the max I would play for now.
That's Bupka like money, by the way.
Boy, oh boy. We're wrapping up our conversation with Rhett Butler. You have been an inspiration, I think, Rhett. And, you know, I keep going back to the charities that you're trying to help. And every time somebody purchases a pair of these William and Harry golf shoes, and believe me, they are top shelf, part of the money certainly going to a good cause. And as far as getting to play Augusta National, there's only one person I know that has enough connections to get you on, and that would be Kelly. I think he has a part-time membership there.
Wait a minute. I thought it was going to be myself when you were commenting there. I thought it was you, Bob Bupka. Don't you? How many Masters, by the way? How many Masters did you cover?
The best one, 1986. Jack Nicklaus, first person to interview him on his way to Butler Cabin. Many argue the best Masters ever played, and I'm certainly in that camp. The Masters is something you have to see, and if you're lucky enough to get to play the golf course, that's in a class of its own. Thank you so much for your time. We've touched a variety of subjects. And I just want people to go out and try a pair of these William and Harry golf shoes. You're not only going to look better than everybody else, you're going to feel better than everybody else. And when you do those two things, you have a tendency to play better than anybody else. Thanks, Rhett, and look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Where do people go for William and Harry online?
WilliamandHarry.com. They can get the golf shoes now. We have custom shirts. We'll have custom belts and some polos to match. And you are right. They're the most comfortable golf shoe I've ever put on. And they're functional, and they don't wear out being a deerskin shoe. That's amazing. I mean, it took us a long time to set them up and develop them, but they're ready now. And it'd be a great Christmas gift. So go to WilliamandHarry.com.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert. And the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to WilliamAndHarry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William and Harry. Bob, I think to be a really good poker player, you played it. I don't play really. But you've played it. Boy, you got to have nerves of steel. And I think that those have to translate in some ways to the game of golf. There's compatibility there, isn't there, to be able to believe in what you're doing, hit the shot and not get flustered.
Yeah, it's amazing. One thing about poker that I don't know if everybody understands, just like golf, if you play a golfer that's better than you, you play him enough, he's going to ultimately win. Same with poker. I mean, you could sit down for one session, two sessions, and beat and lose to guys that aren't as good as you are. But ultimately, if you play enough, the better player in poker is going to prevail, just like it does in golf. And boy, Rhett was a lot of fun to talk to. And those golf shoes of his are just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I've worn them a bunch. The William and Harry golf shoes. Really pleased that he's involved with them. And as we heard, the charitable aspect through suicide prevention is one that resonates, unfortunately, with a lot of people. We thank Rhett Butler very much for joining us. And for my Tom Turkey buddy, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elvin signing off, Musings on Golf.